This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Yes, it's back again. Shady's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back.
Final hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, I got a thought on the golf world with the LIV Golf Tour continuing here today. Plus, we'll get to some big questions in college football for the upcoming year and how this NBA Finals is an example of things in life usually coming full circle. Get to that coming up here on the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. You can always get in touch with the show. Head over to charlestonsportsradio.com. Click on our show page and leave a comment for the show there. Get to us on Twitter at Morrow Middays. Text the show 843-608-1734. Or give us a call 843-721-9500. Game 4 of the NBA Finals is tonight. We've been talking about it throughout this afternoon. And I think the Warriors win tonight. I think they even up the series. And I think we're still in for a good NBA Finals. If Boston wins tonight, however, then I would concede the series to the Celtics going up 3-1. And it may depend on the health of Steph Curry, but I think he'll be fine. I think he plays well. I think the whole Warriors team plays better. I think they even the series tonight. But I also think that life is cyclical, or maybe the more accurate term is just full circle, right? Things come full circle in life. You grow up, and your parents have to take care of you. And then, as you continue to grow up, you have to take care of your parents, right, by the end. Or even, you were on the other side of those battles as a kid with your parents. And you would, as a kid, right, always argue with their parents wanting to be able to do certain things. And they wouldn't let you. Or they would have to ground you. They have to punish you. Or they preach how important homework was, and you didn't want to hear them, and you wanted to go out and play with your buddies. Or you wanted to stay out late on the weekends. And then as you grow up and you have a family of your own, maybe it's kind of like cats in the cradle. Right? You have a family of your own, and you realize now, like, the shoe's on the other foot. You're on the other side of those arguments. And you're trying to discipline your kid and tell them why they can't stay out all night on Saturday and why they have to get their homework done. And then you realize maybe how difficult you were on your parents. Or you understand, like, actually, my parents weren't as big of jerks as I thought they were growing up. They were just being good parents. You do the same things your parents were doing. You're just on the other side of it now. You see it differently. You take the telescope and you flip it around. And it happens a lot in sports as well, because sports, you know, mirror life. The best example that immediately pops to mind would be in Green Bay, where Aaron Rodgers has kind of become, at the end of his career, like Brett Favre was at the end of his. Because you always grow up to become your parent, whether you like it or not. And in this case, Rodgers kind of grew up to become, like, if you want to call him his parent, right? The guy that was there in Green Bay, the older quarterback when he first arrived, Brett Favre. The whole will he, won't he, kind of holding the team over a barrel. Rookie quarterback comes in. They're not really happy about it. Fans kind of turning on them by the end of the career. They love Favre. By the end, they were kind of sick of Favre trying to hold the Packers hostage and wanted to move on with Rodgers. Packer fans, at least before this Rodgers contract, that's the big difference. Favre actually did leave, or they kind of shooed him out the door. Rodgers is still talking about staying until he ends his career there. But for at least a period of time, some fans were kind of turning on Rodgers, unhappy with how he was handling the whole situation. And I think this year's NBA Finals is also similar of that idea of life and sports coming full circle, or being in on the other end of that situation, playing the other role of a situation you were once in. And this all stems from, I have to thank good old Facebook and their Facebook memories. I came across a memory the other day of myself from 2015 talking about LeBron James and his struggles in the fourth quarter of the NBA Finals. And I could say the same thing about Steph Curry this year. And I think there's a lot of similarities between the two players, the two finals matchups, the two situations. Going back to 2015, LeBron was 31, playing in his 6th NBA Finals in his 12th season. Steph Curry this year is 34, playing in his 6th NBA Finals in his 13th season. In 2015, LeBron was facing a young Warriors team at the time that were in their first NBA Finals and were on to something bigger and even better. And they were led by three young stars in Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. This year, Steph Curry is facing a young Celtics team in their first NBA Finals, and they're hoping to go on to bigger and better things starting this year, led by three young stars, Tatum, Brown, and Smart. In 2015, LeBron struggled in the fourth quarter. This year, Steph Curry has struggled in the fourth quarter. In 2015, LeBron didn't have enough help around him. Kevin Love was injured. Kyrie Irving got injured. And he had to rely on J.R. Smith and Mozgov. And this year, Steph Curry hasn't gotten enough help around him either. He's been the best player in the NBA Finals, but then we get to the fourth quarter, and he did not play in the fourth quarter of Game 2. But the Warriors as a team were lousy. They were terrible in the first quarter of Game 1 and the fourth quarter of Game 1 and the fourth quarter of Game 3. In fact, they were the two of the worst quarters they've ever had under Steve Kerr. And they were in the biggest minutes and moments of this series. And a big reason why the Warriors were not good enough in the fourth quarter is because Steph Curry wasn't good enough in the fourth quarter. You go the way of your star, typically. But this is not some sort of indictment on Steph Curry. There's enough Steph Curry haters out there. This is not some sort of theory, idea, thought segment to come on here and tell you that, Steph Curry, he needs Kevin Durant. He's not good enough to win. He doesn't play well in the finals, or he fades away in the fourth. This is more in support of Steph Curry and more of an indictment on the supporting cast. Because Curry, to me, still has been the best player consistently overall in this series through three games. But in the fourth quarters, he has scored 7 total points. Not averaging 7 points. He has scored a combined 7 points in the fourth quarter. He has shot 30%. The greatest shooter we've ever seen is shooting 30% in the fourth quarter. As many turnovers as assists, the Warriors have been outscored by 30 in the fourth quarter alone when Steph Curry's on the floor. Terrible numbers. But again, it's not because he's choking. It's not because the moment is too big. Because just like LeBron in 2015, I think by the time the fourth quarter comes around, they're just worn out. They're asked to do so much. They're not getting enough help. That by the time you get to the fourth quarter, they're running on fumes. They have nothing left. And for LeBron, obviously he still is such a physical, athletic player. And that you tire out by the fourth quarter. Steph Curry, it's a little bit different, but still the same in the sense that it's vital for his game as well. He's an outside shooter. Go to your local gym this weekend and try to get up 50 threes and see how you feel by the time you get to the 50th one. Right, you're going to tire yourself out. So let alone playing in an NBA game, offense, defense, and then in the fourth quarter, after playing for 40 minutes and grinding on both ends and giving it your all, you just don't have your legs underneath you anymore to knock down these outside shots. That's why teams always practice foul shots at the end of practice to simulate what it's like at the end of a game. You got to step to that line. You are worn out. You don't have your legs underneath you. You still have to find a way to make that foul shot. So you practice it at practice, shooting when you're tired. It's a tough thing to do. It's why Steph Curry is shooting 30% in the fourth quarter. Not because suddenly he forgets how to shoot the basketball or suddenly the South, we better pay attention to this Curry guy in the fourth. No, they're double-teaming him all game. He doesn't just subtly mentally, right? Oh, boy, it's the fourth quarter. I can't make a shot now. I think it's just because he's tired. He's worn out. He's doing everything for this team. In 2015, LeBron James had to rely on J.R. Smith and Timothy Mozgov. And this year for the Warriors, there hasn't been enough help either. Nobody helped Curry in Game 1. And despite his highest scoring performance, right, they got blown out. In Game 2, Jordan Poole stepped up, but Klay Thompson was non-existent. And then in Game 3, it flip-flopped. Klay Thompson stepped up. Jordan Poole didn't do enough in Game 3. When Steph Curry's on the floor, the Warriors, in the NBA Finals alone, with Curry on the floor, they have the number one offensive rating in the league this year. It'd be the best offense in the league. When Curry's off the floor, not only is it the worst offense, performance-wise, in the NBA this year, it'd be the worst in 50 years based off of performance. That's a huge swing. Best offense in the league to the worst offense in 50 years when you take Curry off the floor. Because, again, he's just not getting enough help around him. That's why I think that even if this series, if it goes 7 games and the Warriors still lose, Curry should be MVP, just for getting them there. It's hard to look at it that way because this is a dynasty and they set the record for most wins in a season and you're used to seeing Klay and Draymond and Curry, but these aren't the same guys. I mean, Draymond is a shell of himself. He has more podcasts than stats this year. Klay Thompson, it's hard to take 2 years off because of brutal injuries and come back and be the player you once were. Maybe he'll get back to that point or closer to that point down the road. And even Steph Curry, he's 34 years old. He got old fast, it seems. And I'm not talking about his physical play, but you just wake up one day and you're like, wow, he's 34. Or that ever happened to you? You wake up and you think, like, oh my goodness, I'm 40? When did that happen? We've been watching Curry for years. All of a sudden, it's like, wow, he's 34. I mean, LeBron James is 38, heading into his 38th-year-old season. And we get the sense that he's kind of holding on. Curry isn't far behind. He's an older guy in the league. And yet still think of that impact he's had. Number one offense when he's on the floor, worst offense in 50 years when he's off the floor. I think Steph Curry's been the best player in this series, but the problem is, if I were to finish out my top five list, the next four would probably all be Celtics. And you just can't win like that. Even if it was like a Michael Jordan, as good as Jordan was, if the next best, four next best players were all on the other team, he'd even have a hard time winning. And, you know, those Jazz teams were kind of close. You had Malone and Stockton were probably 2 and 3, but you had Scottie Pippen at least who cracked the top five. The Warriors haven't had that Scottie Pippen, somebody in that top five. And the big difference in this series, look, Jason Tatum has not played great. He has not played like a star. Steph Curry has, and yet the Celtics are up 2-1. The Warriors star has been better than the Celtics star. The NBA is usually just about stars, and yet the Warriors don't have the series lead. Why? Because the supporting cast has been much better for Boston than Golden State, and that's been the big difference. Now, as we've been saying all afternoon, and I've been warning you for the last 48 hours, and if I'm wrong tonight, I'll come on the air Monday and eat crow, but I think this series is still far from over. I think Golden State wins tonight. I still think they win the series. But through the first three games, I can also admit, and maybe this is speaking out of both sides of my mouth, Boston has looked like the better all-around team, but I still think Golden State wins tonight and wins the series. Going back to 2015, LeBron was fantastic. He averaged 36 points per game that series. He was the best player in the series. And yet they still lost to Golden State because the Warriors had the next best players. They had Draymond Green in his prime and Klay Thompson in his prime and Steph Curry in his prime. In fact, they were just entering their primes. They were just getting started, kind of like the Celtics team. And for all the efforts of LeBron, his team still lost in six games. For all the Curry efforts this series, maybe they do lose this series. But I think the Warriors have enough experience and still have enough talent and have home court still that I think Golden State still wins this series. But it is very reminiscent to 2015 for me. Right? Steph Curry has to do everything. For Boston, Jason Tatum could have a bad night. They could still win. And that's huge. When you can still win when your star doesn't play great. Good luck for Golden State. If Curry doesn't score 20, at least 25, probably more close for like 30 points, they're going to have a hard time winning any of these games. They have the worst offense in 50 years when Curry's not involved. That is, and this team somehow is in the championship. It speaks to how good and impactful Steph Curry has been. The Warriors are 2-9 in their last 11 finals games without Kevin Durant, right? Because the rest of the supporting cast is not good. That's not an indictment on Steph Curry. That's an indictment on everybody else. Curry's doing his part. He doesn't have that Robin. He had it with Durant. And since Durant left and all these injuries and these guys have gotten older, Klay Thompson's not that Robin anymore. Jordan Poole had a good postseason, but here in it's a little bit different in the finals. He hasn't been that Robin. Wiggins, a little too inconsistent, hasn't been that Robin. The Warriors need somebody like that to step up. Similar to 2015, LeBron was in his sixth NBA Finals. He was playing in Cleveland at the time. Right, and as the Warriors beat the Cavs that year, it was a young Warriors team. It was the first time they're in the NBA Finals. They had no Finals experience. They had guys entering their prime. LeBron was older. And the Warriors won that Finals, and then we saw what they went on to accomplish. Fast forward to this year, if the Celtics do win this Finals, you know there's going to be talk about, okay, what can they do next? How much can they accomplish? How many championships are we looking at the next dynasty? You got a young team playing in the Finals for the first time, trying to win it, and you have guys entering their primes. Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Marcus Smart, still all 25 and younger. And they could be the next Warriors. Right? The Warriors were in this position 70 years ago. Now this year they're in LeBron's position. A lot like growing up, you used to argue with your parents, and now you're on the other side. You're the parent arguing with your kids, realizing what it was like for your parents back in the day to be in that position, arguing with you. Steph Curry's finding out what it was like for LeBron James in that 2015 NBA Finals. He's dealing with it now. LeBron was not able to overcome it. We'll see if Curry can, but I do think the Celtics win tonight, or pardon me, the Warriors win tonight, and even the series. The quick turnaround from Wednesday, I assume Steph Curry will be good enough. I think you get less out of Robert Williams, less dominance inside. And the Celtics, just with how young they are, have been too inconsistent. I don't think they play as well as they did Wednesday. They've been one up, one down this whole postseason. I think Draymond Green is more focused. I think he plays better tonight. I think you get a better all-around effort from Golden State. They win tonight, and then we turn this finals into a three-game series. Tied at two, three games left. It becomes a three-game series, and Golden State will be home for two of the last three. We'll see what happens tonight. We'll, of course, break it down after the weekend. When we come back, we'll answer some of the bigger questions in college football for this upcoming season. Plus, a new college sport powerhouse. I'll touch on that for a moment, too, when we come back. More Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. The football season may still be almost 3 months away, but it's never too soon to look ahead as we turn this off-season Friday into a quasi-football Friday. We'll answer some of the biggest questions in college football in just a moment. But first, let me give props. I don't know if we've ever talked about college softball before on the Morrow Midday Show, but Oklahoma just won the national championship, and they beat their rivals, Texas. What a dominant program this has become. This is the new powerhouse in college sports. They're back-to-back champions in softball, and this is the sixth title for their head coach, Patty Grasso, Patty Gasso, who has six national titles and all since 2000. They've won the championship the last 2 years. Listen to these records, and I know numbers don't always work great on radio. Last 5 years, and we could even go back further than that, but last 5 years specifically, 57-5, 57-6, 20-4, 56-4, 59-3. That's over the last 5 years. They have lost a total of 22 games in 5 years, winning two national championships. They also lost. They were the runner-up in the Women's College World Series. And not only did they go 59-3 this year, that's the best record for women's softball since 1994, but also something like 40 out of those 59 wins were by the mercy rule. I mean, it's absurd. They were dominant. And also, the last number that stands out in the Big 12. In the Big 12, over the last 6 years, they have lost four games. So they're doing pretty good. And they play 18 games in the conference a year. They've lost six of them over the last 6 years. I mean, this is like Geno Auriemma, UConn women's stuff. Dominant for Oklahoma softball. So congrats to them on winning the national championship once again. It looked like it was a sold-out place. I don't know how they did on the TV. I was surprised just to see, like, I don't know, Thursday night, national title game. I mean, there's no NBA playoffs. It is kind of the quasi-weekend. I don't know, Thursday, I thought that was kind of an odd time to have it. But nonetheless, congratulations to Oklahoma winning another national championship in softball. Speaking of college sports, we're gearing up for college football as always around here. We have compiled just some generic questions to look at some of the better teams in college football this year. Let's run through them. We'll run through some of the big questions for the upcoming college football season. And we use the SEC theme for everything because it's the best theme song in college football. So we have about seven questions. You could say because of a touchdown, an extra point if you want. But Trent will ask me, and I'll give my best answer possible for some of the biggest questions for college football this year.
Luke, we begin with a pressing one. First question, which team will have the most wins and which team will have the fewest wins? Alabama, Ohio State, or Georgia? Starting out with a tough one.
They are all projected to win 10.5 games this year, just to provide some context. I'll roll with Alabama. I think Saban is always the safest bet. That's to have the most wins. Ohio State is tempting as well. Georgia, man, that is actually, now that I think about it, That's a tough question. I'll take Alabama because I think they'll have the best quarterback in the country. They'll have the best defensive player in the country. They'll have the best coach in the country. So if I'm picking which of these three teams will have the best year, I think Alabama's the safe bet. If I had to pick worst, I guess I'll say Georgia. Now, worst could still be a really good year. But for Georgia, you lost a lot of guys off that defense. They have the worst quarterback out of the three. Maybe there's some sort of hangover to winning the national championship. I think Alabama wins the SEC and Ohio State wins the Big Ten. So by process of elimination, I'll have to say Georgia has the worst year out of those three. Alabama will have the best. But those are the three teams that are the most favored in college football this year. Those are believed to be the three best teams. So, you know, pick your poison. But I'll go Alabama, Ohio State, Georgia in that order.
There we go. Next question here, Luke. Which Clemson coach will have the best year? Dabo Swinney, Brent Venables, or Tony Elliott?
So the way I would look at this is not necessarily wins and losses, but like the most impressive job. So if Tony Elliott really elevates Virginia, you could say he did a better job than Dabo or Venables, even if he didn't win as many games. With all of that said, I'm going to go back to I think Dabo has the best year. I think Tony Elliott taking over Virginia is not easy in year one, and I'm not high on Brent Venables, at least to begin, at Oklahoma. They fortunately got Dylan Gabriel to come in and play quarterback, but Oklahoma lost their star quarterback, their best wide receiver. They lost their backup quarterback. A lot of changes over there. You're going from an offensive-themed team to a defensive team. First time as a head coach for Venables. The Big 12 wide open. So I will say, Dabo, I think Clemson will have a good year. I voiced my concerns about Clemson in the first hour in terms of winning the ACC. But I have low expectations for Tony Elliott in year one. I have low expectations for Oklahoma in year one of Venables. I think they take a big step back this year. And Clemson, even if they have the same record as a year ago, I mean, we could say that's underachieving for Dabo. But I think Clemson will have the best year of those three. So I'll say Dabo. I'm kind of talking myself out of it. But I'll say Dabo has the best year of those three coaches.
Luke, next one here. Who will have the better year, Marcus Freeman or the family man, Brian Kelly?
I think definitely Brian Kelly. I'm not as high on Marcus Freeman at Notre Dame. Now, Notre Dame has one of the higher win totals this year. I don't know. I just don't see it. I'm concerned about Freeman. He's a great recruiter. As of now, Notre Dame is the best recruiting class for next year's class. But what about actually winning games? Freeman's a first-time head coach. He's in his early 30s. He's only been a coordinator at this level for just a couple years. I have a lot of concerns. Meanwhile, Brian Kelly's a proven winner. Now, I know he's coming into the SEC. He'll play a tougher schedule than Freeman will at Notre Dame, but Brian Kelly has won everywhere he has gone, and he's had immediate success, and I think he'll turn around LSU right away. Will they go in the SEC this year? No, but I think they'll be very competitive. Notre Dame, to me, I just have concerns over the long haul. Freeman probably is stepping into maybe an easier situation to begin, but Brian Kelly is the better coach. I think Brian Kelly will have more success, and so I might as well say beginning right away in year one. I think LSU will have a better year this year than Notre Dame. I'm down on Notre Dame. I don't think they'll be in the running for a playoff spot this year.
Luke, outside of Georgia, Alabama, and Ohio State, which team will win 10-plus games? It's a tough one here.
Now, again, going back to Vegas, they then have Cincinnati next in terms of the highest win total, followed by Michigan. I'm not going to say either one of those teams. I'm going to say, and I'm leading the hype train right now, I'm going with Utah. I think Utah wins the Pac-12. And when I look at that conference, I think USC will be better this year. Oregon is always tough, but I have questions about Dan Lanning. I think UCLA will be improved this year. But overall, it's the Pac-12. I think Utah's really good. I mean, some people are talking about they could be a top five team in the country this year. I don't know if I'd be that bold, but I think they'll be one of the better teams. We saw them make it to the Rose Bowl last year. They won the Pac-12 a year ago. Can they win 10 games playing in the Pac-12? I think so. I could see them going 10-2 in the regular season, winning the conference, and being another one of those teams to have double-digit victories. Cincinnati, I think, takes a step back. They lost a lot, including their quarterback. Michigan, I think, takes a step back. They lost a lot, their best defensive players. But Utah is bringing back their quarterback. They're bringing back their running back. They're bringing back the coaching staff. They won the conference last year. So behind the three favorites, Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama, I probably like Utah the most.
Wow, Luke, that's a hot take right there, I feel like. Now, another question here. Who will be the second best team in the SEC East? You know my answer.
I'll say Tennessee. I'm going with Tennessee. I like Josh Heupel. I like what he's done at Tennessee. Now, they faded. They're better early in the year. They're also better early in games. That's an adjustment they have to make. The scripted plays were really good for Tennessee. Teams kind of caught up to them. Maybe that's a little bit of a concern. They're an offense that plays really fast. Maybe defenses will be better prepared for that in the SEC this year. But I just like Hooker. I like Tennessee. I like Heupel. I like what they have there. I think Georgia wins the conference. I think Florida will be improved this year, but they have too far of a way to climb to get to that point. I think Kentucky will probably win as many games as they did a year ago. South Carolina will be improved, but not enough. I think Missouri will be worse this year. Vanderbilt's irrelevant. So I think Tennessee will take a big step forward this year. Hooker will have a really good year. The offense will be still tough to stop. And I think it comes down to Tennessee or Kentucky for that two spot behind Georgia. I'll say Tennessee is the second best team in the East this year.
Luke, which coach on the hot seat will have the best year? Will it be Scott Frost, David Shaw, Jeff Collins with a G, and Herm Edwards? Which one?
I think it's Scott Frost at Nebraska. Jeff Collins has never won more than three games. I don't think they'll be much better at Georgia Tech. He'll probably be out of a job. Herm Edwards, there's a lot of noise around that program. They lost some coaches. They're still waiting on their punishment for some things they did wrong. Some feel they maybe have even underachieved a little bit. They faded. I think that was last year after a good start. I'm not a big Herm guy right now at Arizona State. And then David Shaw, Stanford's just a tough job. And especially with the growing transfer portal, Stanford, Notre Dame, Northwestern, they can't take advantage of the transfer portal as much as other schools because of their strict academic requirements. So they're kind of falling behind, or at least it's a disadvantage for them, the use of the transfer portal and the direction the sport's going in. So things are only going to get tougher for David Shaw. Long answer short, shorter, I'll say Scott Frost at Nebraska. We talked about this the other day. Nebraska had a positive point differential last year despite going 3-9. Of their nine losses, eight were by one score, all nine were by single digits, and that includes games against six ranked teams. I think Nebraska will be much better. Scott Frost coaching for his job. I think they'll have a winning record this year, go to a bowl game, and be much improved. So of those coaches, all maybe coaching for their job, I think Scott Frost will have the best year of those four.
And Luke, final one here. Who will have the better year, Michigan State or Michigan?
I have concerns with both teams. I've been saying all offseason, I think Michigan will take a step back this year, a la Florida a year ago. And I've given my reasons why, right? I mean, they overachieved a year ago. Maybe they regressed to the mean. They lost their best players in the draft like Florida did. Harbaugh got a little big for his britches, thought he was onto greener pastures like Dan Mullen. Didn't quite work out. And Harbaugh lost both coordinators, including the defensive coordinator, and they were led by their defense last year. So I'm down on Michigan. Now, when it comes to Michigan State, I think Michigan State's an interesting case study. And now we have a little bit more of this in college football this year. Ole Miss replenished their roster at the transfer portal. USC, new coaching staff came in, filled their roster at the transfer portal. I'm curious to see, and it's probably going to be a yes, but how sustainable of a model this is long-term. Can you continue to just build through the transfer portal every year? It worked well for Mel Tucker last year. Are they going to regress to the mean this year, or is Michigan State under Mel Tucker kind of here to stay? To answer the question, I think Michigan State will have the better year. I have questions about both. But I think Michigan State has the better quarterback. And I think Michigan, I've issued my concerns that I'm more concerned. There's more concerns about Michigan than Michigan State. Michigan State lost their star running back. The question is, you know, can they repeat what they did last year? Or is that kind of them overachieving? But they have the better quarterback. They got a good coach. I'll say Michigan State has a better year than Michigan. And when you look at, again, just going back to Vegas, Michigan State has a win total of 7.5. Michigan, 9.5. I could see Michigan winning. I put them around 8-4 this year. And quite frankly, I could see things going really south and Michigan being like 7-5, being a huge disappointment this year. Kind of like Florida a year ago. Michigan State, their win total 7.5. I could see them exceeding that. I could see Michigan winning 8, Michigan State maybe getting back to 9 games like they did a year ago. But I think Michigan State will have the better year. Speaking of win totals and gambling odds, Utah's win total is only 8.5.
Whoa.
I may have to hammer the over.
You might be one of the only guys in the South right now that thinks Utah could potentially be a top five team.
That's true. I don't know how many people are even paying attention to the Pac-12, unless it's Lincoln Riley. I don't know if I'd put – I was thinking about this the other day driving around. I was thinking of playoff teams already for next year. And I hate going chalk, but Most people in college football probably have a clear three, or at least two, Alabama, Ohio State, and then maybe you think, you know, the SEC will probably get two teams. It'll be Georgia. Those are the three favorites. Clemson is then the fourth favorite. I'm not as high on Clemson as maybe most people are. I don't know. I'm not. So I was thinking about, who's that fourth team? Is it going to be from the Big 12, the Pac-12, the ACC? I don't know. Maybe it is Utah. Maybe I am bold enough to say Utah wins the Pac-12 and they go into the playoff this year. But I was trying to think of that fourth team as kind of like a wild card. Is it going to be Oklahoma? Is it going to be Texas somehow? Is it going to be a Clemson or somebody from the ACC, a Miami? Or is it a Utah? I don't really know. I don't have a good answer for that fourth team. Most people would probably say Ohio State, Georgia, Alabama. And then the real question is, who is everybody's fourth team for the playoff? Trent, if I were to put you on the spot here in June, who do you see as maybe the top tier of college football this year?
I'm relatively high on Southern Cal, so I'm going to have to give them a look to be that fourth team. I feel like the stars are aligning for them. I love the roster that they've put together, so I'd probably say Southern Cal. I'm not counting Oregon out, definitely not. Dan Lanning's a good coach. But, man, it's just everybody wants parity, but once you get to that top four, it's the same four schools, same five schools every single time, and there's about two or three that are always going to come out on top, always, and that being Alabama, Georgia, Ohio State.
Yeah, the thing I always say, Phil Steele, who we have on the show every year when he comes out with his magazine, and it's going to be coming out, I think, July 4th, so in the next few weeks, it's always an exciting time. Phil likes to brag that he puts out his top 25. I think he's already done it. He has like a 90% success rate. And Phil is the best at analyzing college football and predicting college football from an analytical standpoint and everything. But I'll also say, while Phil likes to take credit for that, it just speaks to how predictable college football is. That I think a lot of people that are as locked into the sport as Phil are can put together a top 25 that will also hit at a 90% rate, because we know every year who the teams are going to be. Now, last year was the most unpredictable year we've had in quite some time in college football. Maybe this year will be something similar. But I guess we're both on the same wavelength looking to the Pac-12. You think USC? I'm leaning. I'm not going to give you a solid opinion that I take Utah as a playoff team, but I am leaning in that direction. But maybe it's the Pac-12 that fills that fourth spot.
Yeah, I just don't think that this year, Michigan, if they're trying to repeat against Ohio State, I don't think it will happen. I really don't. C.J. Stroud's much improved the team, even though they lost a couple good pieces. Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, they reloaded with Jackson Smith and Jigba and Marvin Harrison Jr. So, this team's all the way back looking to go, and I see them blowing out Michigan this year the way they did Michigan State last year.
Yeah, probably. I mean, Ohio State had the best offense in the country statistically last year. I think they'll be even better offensively this year. People are talking about how they could have the best quarterback, running back, and wide receiver in the country potentially. So, yeah, Ohio State, I like them a lot in the Big Ten. Hey, when we come back, the LIV Golf Tour is continuing on. I had another thought about that whole thing last night. And I think in this whole golf situation with LIV Golf Tour coming about, I think the only people winning are the golfers getting the guaranteed contracts from LIV Golf. I think the sport is hurting. I think the PGA Tour suffers from this. I think the fans suffer from this. And I'll explain why when we come back. It's more Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. I had another thought about the whole golf world. I think all of this, none of this is good for the golf world or the fans of the game. The only people coming out on top of this are the golfers getting these big contracts. And then maybe if you want to say the Saudi Arabians for being able to sports wash things, as they say, that new term that's being thrown around. But I saw this online. There's a new Coke-Cola.
Okay.
That's trending. It's like a TikTok thing. It's supposed to be a healthy version. So yesterday we talked about mayonnaise in the coffee. What about this one? People apparently are mixing balsamic vinegar and sparkling water.
All right. What a weep.
And they say it tastes just like Coke, like Coca-Cola, but it's a lot healthier for you. And it's become a TikTok trend.
Well, we might need to pass this along to the gentleman who hosts the 3-6 show. You know, if he wants to try an alternative for the Coca-Colas, because he does slam a good bit,
That's true.
Every so often. But, you know, Luke, this is just another thing. People are just, I don't know. I will not try this.
No?
You know, actually, what we should do is we should do a taste test live on air. I think we'll get some Perrier water, if you will, and we'll pour. Is it no flavored sparkling water? It's just, you know, tonic?
I think so. I think it's just regular sparkling water.
So we'd go get some San Pellegrinos and and we'll put some balsamic vinegar in it. I mean, this isn't good, Luke.
I am intrigued because I am somebody that I do enjoy a nice soda, but I've had to cut it out. It's terrible for you.
One of the worst.
Oh, it's awful. All that sugar and everything. So when I got into a little bit of a health kick a year ago, I said, okay, no more soda. I was drinking way too much soda. So I am intrigued because I still love the flavor of soda. So if you're telling me this is a healthy alternative, I'm at least willing to give it a try. Now, what would you rather have a taste of? Either the new Coke, the healthy Coke, or the coffee with the mayonnaise in it?
You know, the coffee with the mayonnaise, Will Levis seems like a great guy, and I appreciate what he does for the sport, but I'm completely, like you said, I'm completely out on him. If I was a GM, I would not be drafting a gentleman who puts mayonnaise in his coffee. I would rather probably try the alternative Coke just to see how it tastes, because you're right, I enjoy a crisp soda, you know, on a hot afternoon, but I don't drink them because they're loaded with sugar and a bunch of bad stuff for you. So, yeah, I'd probably do the Coke, Luke. We're going to have to do this. Maybe it's a movie Monday and a taste test Monday.
That's true. Taste test Tuesday. All about that alliteration.
There it is.
Let's just we'll try to keep it from becoming a bit, though, because I don't want to be having nasty things every week. But I'm interested to try this. Are you a sparkling water guy?
Yeah, you know, I am. I won't be that guy, though, when they, you know, at a nice restaurant, when they come over, they say, you know, still or sparkling. I want to say sparkling to be that guy, but I'm never that guy. So I just say, give me a tap and, you know, if a steakhouse, glass of red wine, please. Your cheapest one, because I can't tell the
That's
difference.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Always go with the house. I'm not a sparkling. I had a buddy growing up. Their family was huge. They would, like, only drink sparkling water. Not a big guy, but I'll tell you what. Growing up in my family, my grandfather used to have the fridge in the garage filled with Frescas.
Ooh.
Now, that's a soda, but it's called the sparkling flavored soda. I love a good Fresca.
Absolutely. Undefeated.
Yes.
As a child, you know, playing in the yard, you go pop a Fresca while you're playing some basketball.
Absolutely.
Nothing better.
I haven't had a Fresca in a long time.
Add that to the list.
Yes. And that, by the way, they say that has, like, no calories, no sugar, and I think it tastes good. It's like a... That's supposed to be a healthy soda because it's a sparkling flavored soda. So a Fresca, I guess that's the closest thing I get. I'm not a sparkling water guy, but I'll knock down a few Frescas, no problem.
Is there any bad effects? Not like, you know, soda, you know, a Coke. There's a lot of bad effects that come with it, like the sugar and everything. With sparkling water, right? It's not like I drink a LaCroix every so often. Yeah, I mean, call me bougie, but I'll drink a LaCroix. You know, the plum one is absolutely fantastic, but it has no sugar, no calories, no, you know, carbs or nothing.
Yeah, it's true. That's why, you know, a lot of times I have no problem drinking water, but sometimes I'll mix it up. I'll do a little Propel. A little flavored water, because I get it, right? Water can get a little boring after a while. You want a little flavor, but you don't want to get all the sugar of a soda or even a juice. So I'll do a little Propel. But, yeah, the idea is that these things, it's just the same idea as water, just a little flavored, like a Propel is supposed to be. Although I think there's some salt in there, or just it's a sodium. But anyways, point being, yeah, I think these things are supposed to be still healthy alternatives.
Wouldn't, like, the balsamic vinegar, like, that's got to have some sodium in it, no? Like...
I guess it's still better than all the sugar they pour into it.
Well, yeah, people use Coca-Cola, like flat Coca-Cola, to drain their drains. Like, that's a real thing.
One time I had a situation. I was out with my car. I had a problem with the battery of the car where it what's the term I'm looking for? It was kind of like pouring out of the battery.
Ooh, okay.
I can't think of the term off the top of my head, but you know what I'm talking about. Anyways, I happened to have a leftover cup of Coke from a fast food restaurant in the car from, like, the day prior. And sure enough, I had a rag in my car, put the Coke on it, cleaned the battery. We're good to go.
Wow.
Use the Coke to fix the issue.
And, folks, you're putting that substance in your body.
It cleaned off the battery in my car of whatever that is that pours out of the battery when the battery there's an issue with your battery, and I can't think of the word right now off the top of my head. But then there's that foamy liquid. I used Coca-Cola, cleaned it right off. Got me where I had to go before I needed to replace the battery.
Yeah, if you got to clean your shower drain, you just get a 2-liter bottle of Coke, and it'll probably take majority of the bottle, but that thing is crystal clear after it's done.
There's videos online you could watch of people putting things in a cup of Coke, and it just, like, it disintegrates, right? Like, crazy things that you never think of. So, anyways, and I love soda, so I'm just as guilty. But, yeah, it is wild that we put that in our bodies with really how terrible it is for you. Yeah. So if you're giving me a healthy alternative, we may have to try it on the show next week. Real quick, when it comes to the LIV Golf and everything, as I said, I think everyone's losing in this except the guys getting the money. The problem is I think more will move over to the LIV Golf Tour, so then the PGA Tour will become watered down. The LIV Golf, then now what you have is you're going to have a mix of both, right? Like in the LIV Golf Tour, they're using 48 golfers in each of these events. Only 17 came from the PGA Tour. So you still have a lot of no-name golfers in these events that aren't necessarily professional quality. Then you're going to take away some golfers from the PGA Tour. It's going to water it down where now you're going to have more golfers on the PGA Tour that suddenly a spot's open for them that don't necessarily, they're not talented enough to be the traditional golfer on that tour. There's an old expression, or really it's one of those laws. It's Gresham's Law that the idea is bad money drives out good money. And you could say in this situation, which one's the bad money? Right? You could say the Saudi Arabian, bad money drives out good money. So the LIV Golf Tour could really put a dent into the PGA Tour as you know it. Here's my concern. As a golf fan, I always say competition's the best thing for anything, for sports, for anything in life. If you're a boss, your company, right, you want to create competition so you make sure everybody is working hard. Problem becomes, you know, when Dustin Johnson shanks a shot, he's getting $150 million guaranteed just to be there. And if everyone gets paid just for being there, even if you finish in last place. My concern in all this is once you get to guaranteed money, do these golfers really care? And the more golfers go to the LIV Golf Tour, it's going to water down both events. And then if you try to tune into the LIV Golf Tour, right, if you're a golf fan thinking, hey, at least we get more golf now, and competition's a good thing, yeah, but that competition, Phil Mickelson, regardless of how he does on the course, is getting over $200 million just to begin with. What is his motivation to go out there and actually play well or care, actually try? He could finish in last and still walk away with $120,000 for 3 days' work. That's pretty good while getting $200 million up front. And it's the old classic Marvin Hagler line, you know, who's the boxer. And he said, it's hard to wake up and train at 6 a.m. when you're sleeping in silk sheets. And it's similar here. These guys, they're set now. Mickelson, Dustin Johnson, DeChambeau, all these other guys making the – so what is their motivation, right? At least on the PGA Tour, you have to play well to get the big payday. So you want to go out there and make sure you're giving it your all. On the LIV Golf Tour, you already got paid. It's why in the NBA, teams will tank and guys will sit out games. Guaranteed contracts. Whether they're playing or not, doesn't matter. They obviously want to go win championships, but hey, you know, they're making their millions regardless. Major League Baseball, similar idea. The NFL, there is no tanking, and guys want to be out there and they'll play through injuries. Why? Because the contracts are not guaranteed. If you're working on commission, you're going to go out there and hustle more than the salesman who just has a higher base salary and he can support his family, even if he's not making a ton of sales. Similar here. One of the things I thought the PGA Tour, people will complain, right? Oh, these guys, they're not making enough money. I always like the idea of being incentive driven, that you have to go play well if you want to make big money, right? You're motivated to make sure you're tip top shape. You're playing your best so that you could get the big payday. LIV Golf Tour, they're just handing out the big paydays. Doesn't matter what you do out there on the course. You're going home with tons of money. And I think the product suffers. It's going to make the PGA Tour suffer. And then I think you, the golf fan at home, is going to suffer because now the golf's watered down on both quote-unquote tours, and on the LIV Golf Tour where they're stealing some of these big names, the guys just simply may not care anymore. As they say, bad money drives out good, and I think the bad money of the LIV Golf Tour is really going to put a dent into the quote-unquote good money of the PGA Tour, if you will, the bad versus good in this situation. And I think a golf fan should be concerned about the future of the sport they may love. We'll wrap up your Friday next. It's the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Keep me moving with some energy.
Wrapping up your Friday on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. And take the Morrow Midday Show with you wherever you go. Stream us online at charlestonsportsradio.com through TuneIn Radio, your smart speaker, or our free app. Search ESPN Charleston in the App Store and download the free app today. And that allows you to listen to the show live or on demand from anywhere in the world. The podcasts are available there. Appreciate listeners checking in from at least 12 different states and multiple countries on this Friday. ESPN Charleston in the App Store. Don't forget about the Summer Golf Tour continuing Monday morning, 8 a.m. The next round of foursomes go on sale at charlestonsportsradio.com. Get yours before they sell out. They always do very quickly. Game 4 of the NBA Finals tonight. We're on the Warriors in these parts. I think they even up the series. Real quick, Trent, what were those props?
Steph Curry over 4.5 threes. Andrew Wiggins over 16.5 points. Book it.
Let's see how we do tonight. Whatever happens, we'll be back on Monday to break it all down. If you ever miss anything on the show, catch you on demand. In the meantime, life is a series of hellos and goodbyes. For now, we say goodbye. We'll say hello again Monday at noon. The Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.